Welcome to Teachings in the Air. Welcome to Teachings in the Air podcast with Jerry Oldman. Coming to you from Hunkaminam territory with a podcast series about Indigenous men's health and wellness. We aim to inspire, motivate, and empower Indigenous men to be sound in mind, body, and spirit, because that's what health means. Hello, this is Teachings in the Air with Jerry Oldman. Today's podcast is called Breaking the Identity Trap. The word identity is referring to sameness. You know, there's been struggles, I believe, by many human beings around identity. Like there's a fight between wanting to be the same and at the same time accept our unique self, our differences, how we can be different from others. So it has been a struggle for myself, for yours truly. I struggled with my identity, at times thinking I'm not Uchilmuch enough, not Indigenous enough because I wasn't a fluent speaker. Before I got involved in ceremony because I didn't do ceremony. You know, so I struggled with that. So today's podcast is about breaking the identity trap so we can be who we are and accept ourselves and be all right, be okay. And to join me in this discussion today, I have a wonderful young guest. His name is Jeremy Ratt. He does podcasts for CBC. He's a musician, songwriter. So he's going to be joining me today in this conversation about identity, breaking the identity trap. The whole part of a created identity was first off that I've done research on it because I started to actually work in. People asked me to talk about racism.
Right.
You know, I think it was 95 or something like that. So, of course, I started doing research. I'm an avid reader, but I said, okay, where does this start, this racism identity? So, of course, The first thing I'd done was look up the word racism. And race, of course, is about ethnicity. And ism is a word, it forms nouns, and it's about negativity, like alcoholism. Like I'm an alcoholic, that means I have a negative experience with alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, you know, there's alcoholism, racism, chauvinism. You know, so that ism forms, it's letting us know that there's something negative happening there.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked that up and I said, okay, what's the negativity between Indigenous people and Europeans or people that come here? So I looked back and the Pope in 1492 in Europe had tremendous power. Over people, you know, people were afraid to go to hell, for instance. Mm. So if the Pope excommunicated you, which means kicked you out of the church, you wouldn't have a way to go to heaven. So the next thing is hell, of course. So I looked at, I was reading that, and Christopher, when he went back, talked to the Pope and said, there's people there. And the Pope of the day said, are they Christians? And no, they're not. Okay, then the Pope said, as we'll call that terra nullius, which is an old Roman law, which means empty land. That means we can go in and take whatever we want. So that opened a door, because we weren't Christian, was inferring that we're inferior because we were not following Christ. Of course, we didn't even know Christ existed, you know, before contact. Yeah, so this whole, there's something wrong with those people, sentiment started from there.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we're inferior because we don't follow Christ.
Right.
Because Christian means to be that you're like Christ. And, you know, and Christ was a healer, he was generous, he was compassionate, he was all of those things that I understand anyway, because I grew up in Christianity and the schools.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so this whole, I call it a created identity for indigenous people, started way back then. That we're stupid, we're lazy, we're crazy, we're drunken. They kept adding to that ism, that forming noun, you know, of indigenous people.
Yeah.
So that's why when I first heard about you and seen the email and stuff, and I listened to one of your podcasts, I say, hey, this is brilliant. A person like your age, you're young. I mean, you're very young. You know, I come to when I was 27 years of age. That's when I kicked the bad habits and I started to turn to culture and to become part of the solution.
Yeah.
To what's going on. Because, so anyway, so I really started to look at this identity business. Because I remember as a youngster being ashamed of being indigenous. Because I'd see violence and intoxication and things happening around me. And it wasn't like it was all like that. But that's all you need to do is be in the midst of some violence and it impacts you.
Yeah.
It marks you. The word character, characteristic, comes from the word character, and character means a sharp etched line. So my characteristic of shame come from seeing violence. And it wasn't all violent. I want to make that very clear. But the ones that I had witnessed that as a child, and it started to put marks on my mind. But at the same time, when I look back at it, I would hear these beautiful stories about our people from elders, about the generosity, the respect, how they would train people, what they would do. I was fortunate enough to be in the presence of elders where their first language was their language. In their first school, I call it fireside PhDs. You know, they were on the land, they were on the fires, they were in the ceremony. They were,
that's the way to live.
Yeah, and that's the way that formed them, that formed their worldviews of being interconnected with everything, you know, the animals, the birds, the air, the water, the land, you know, and it was in the language. So anyway, so I wanted to tell you just a little bit about myself. You know, I'm a father, I'm a stepfather, I'm a brother, I'm a grandfather, a great-grandfather, you know, and a friend, and someone that, you know, found out that part of my biggest healing to help me with my healing journey was to start to help others.
Yeah.
That it helped me to forget about myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when I got focused on myself only, it was, oh, poor me. You know, I've been assimilated, I've been colonized, all of those things, right?
Right.
But I'm not now.
Yeah.
So I don't say colonized anymore. I'll say decolonize, but I won't say colonized. I'll say decolonize, like the colonizer, for instance, brought alcohol as part of their way of taking over, because they could see the impact of it on indigenous people. I'm in Manitoba, so I read a book here called Clearing the Plains about how the big farms come to be in the prairies. And part of it was through Hudson's Bay Company coming in, you know, getting the furs. And they one year they brought in 2,100 gallons of rum that they're giving away to the indigenous people because they can get a better deal. So that's part of a created identity about drunken, You see, so if I decolonize myself by not drinking, for instance. I decolonize myself by not swearing, because that's a colonizer language.
Yeah.
I was effing stupid Indians, you know, and stuff like that, right? So that's my way of decolonizing. By doing ceremonially consistently. Burning medicine, having sweat ceremony, you know, doing things and, you know, on certain days, like when there's an equinox, all of those things, I have a ceremony.
Yeah.
You know, so that's part of my decolonization, because when I was a colonized person, I was going to church. Not putting down the church. Church has helped many people. But for my identity purpose, to embrace my identity, I looked at our ways and I believe in it. I live it. And that's to me, is for my, I think decolonizing is a personal thing for everyone. Like how you decolonize yourself, or even if you think you need to, you know, is up to you. You know, and it's the same for everyone. Because I've learned that I cannot tell people what to do, not to do. I can suggest, I can tell children, hey, don't do that. You know, if they're going to head each other or something. But with adults, I was told by one of my friends, he was watching me with my teenage children, and I'm telling him what to do, and he takes me aside. He says, Jerry, that's a young man now. He's not a child anymore. You suggest to him what to do. You don't tell him what to do. Because he's an adult now. He's a man. He can have children. When I think of that, I think that's brilliant. Because if I keep telling him what to do and he rebels against me or whatever, you know, all of the things that happen between parents and children and siblings, you know, is, okay, I'll suggest. As being indigenous. You know, because my dad, my late father, was brilliant. But he was indigenous, that's why. He didn't question his identity. He lived his identity. No confusion there. Oh, I'm Statliam. This is the way we do it. You know, like, trained us to work hard, you know, to be respectful. You know, he says, that's our way. He says, my late parents used to push me to helping people at gatherings like funerals and things. You go over there, don't just stand around. You become involved. You help.
Yeah.
You know, and that is a good way, you know. And yeah, so that's part of, you know, when I talk about identity, what is indigenous being? You know, and for me to deal with, for instance, my mixed heritage, first, of course, and like everybody else, I sort of denied, oh, no, I'm Statliam. You know? But after that, after a while, I started to embrace it.
Yeah.
Who am I to question my relatives if they fall in love with somebody else that's not indigenous?
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. So anyway, so that's been part of my journey, and it's been exciting. I have had a chance to travel across Canada from East Coast to West Coast.
You know, that's incredible.
Oh, up to Anchorage, Alaska, and the Northwest Territories, and Yukon, down to the mm-hmm. United States, you know, and it was part of my work.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of my education, I've traveled different parts of the globe, too.
That's awesome.
Yeah, to, and I put it in my mind, all the journeys I'm going to make, when I go somewhere, I want to learn something.
Yeah.
I want to get some knowledge, like when I go to England or Italy or Greece, I want to learn something.
I like to think about that with my days as well, where it's like, I'm going to go to sleep with something new today.
Yeah. Yes, that's a good one. Okay, Jeremy, so that's me. So tell me about yourself.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Jerry. I wanted to thank you for everything that you're doing, because, and I'm really blessed to have you, your team reach out to me, because, you know, I was listening to season 5, episode 1 of your mm-hmm. podcast. And what happened was, it was raining, because I'm here in Vancouver, and it's in that season where it's raining and snowing at the same time. So on the ground, there's just slush. And I had your podcast playing in my headphones, and I had a hole in my shoe. I was walking, and I was, you know, trying to avoid puddles, but my feet were still getting soaked. And I was like, well, at the very least, I'm listening to an elder, and I was happy about that. So I was really amazed by your podcast and your story, and just hearing you share your reflections. It was really comforting. So it speaks to me, because, you know, I'm 20, going on 21 this month, actually. And then, you know, to see everything you're doing up until, you know, 72 to 73, helping people, that's an incredible thing. And it's something that I'm trying to do right now, too. So, yeah, I was born in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, and on my mother's side, she's Cree, she's Woodland Cree. And that's the indigenous side of me, or I, as I say now, just, you know, that's who I am. And my father had a bunch of different European ancestries, but I don't take claim to any of them, because it's like you were talking about, like Irish, French, German, all these different things, and they're part of me, but, you know, he wasn't a part of my life in any way. So it was my mom and I. She's a single parent. And that's where I would, you know, start having these feelings of not knowing where to be in life, because I had pale skin at the time. I still have lighter skin to some extent. So I was white passing. So you imagine the confusion when you're on the reserve. I was in Pelican Narrows, and have other kids looking at me funny, because they thought I was white in the res. And they're like, what is this kid doing out here on the reserve? And then in the city, I mean, the same thing. Nobody thought I was really native either, but I know I wasn't white. So I had this 50-50 split, or at least that's what I thought of it back then. And I carried that with me throughout my whole life, but I never really told anybody about it, because I didn't think it was a valid problem. And my mom and I always lived under my mom. So we would move from town to town every couple years. So I would go from Prince Albert, Saskatchewan, to Regina, Saskatchewan, and then... Actually, 10 years ago, 2012, I moved to Invermere, British Columbia, because my aunt married someone who is Shuswap, and that's on their territory, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And my, so then therefore we got introduced to my uncle's side of the family, who's all Shuswap. And the wonderful thing is they had reclaimed a lot of their, you know, a lot of who they were as indigenous peoples, because my step-grandfather owned this land that was, you know, the land of his people. So when I came to Invermere, there was all these vast open fields where all these old houses were from the 1800s, where the people would go. And like, it was by the river, it was by a creek, and they would have sweat lodges. They had a sweat lodge, and they would do sweats, and they do fasting, and they do all the ceremony. And it's on traditional territory. If you look in the ground, you'll find arrowheads.
Yes.
From all the way back then. Yeah. And they were all, my grandparents on that side were survivors. On both sides of my family, they're survivors of residential school. So when I came there, you know, I was given an opportunity to partake in ceremony and partake in, you know, a lot of what our culture is, a lot of our culture in ceremony, and to be with our people. And I didn't really take it, I didn't really indulge myself in that when I should have, because I was still carrying that shame that I had my entire life of not really feeling Native enough, or not even wanting to be Native, which is the worst part. Mm-hmm. And that's what really spoke to me when you were talking on your podcast about how, you know, if you're growing up as someone in Canada, as an Indigenous person, you spend your whole life hearing what you were saying before, those stupid Indians, those drunken Indians. And all of those words were sticking to me when I was young. So I didn't know if I wanted to associate with who I was. And that really came to a head when I came to a place like Kelowna. And that's where I moved to after Invermere. And it's where the Okanagan peoples are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, but Kelowna is a very, I don't want to say, I have my own judgments, obviously, and those are my opinions, but it's a very conservative white retirement town. So it has a lot of isms, as you would say, in terms of like racism. Like, you know, there's a lot of people there with a lot, much older mindsets that call back to things that we struggle with to this day. And so when I was seeing something like that, I was finding myself in high school. I was a teenager by that point. And I was finding myself in this school full of, you know, kids, white kids who were like the kids of doctors and lawyers and real estate agents and all these very wealthy people. So I was surrounded by these people, these 16-year-olds who had cars and watches and phones and all these other things. And I was a broke, half-Native kid living under my single mom. So that made me feel bad about myself even more, even though I shouldn't. I knew it was wrong to feel bad about it, but I still did. And that's the thing about shame, is you carry it even when it's invalid sometimes. But you just can't help it. It's an indulgence. It's an evil in its own way.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was starting to find myself as an artist, I started to write. And that was one of the wonderful things, is I do want to mention that my childhood, I don't think it was bad.
Mm-hmm.
There were bad things about it, but I don't think it was, you know, it was hard because I grew up poor. Like I do know the feeling of having utilities cut off. I know the feeling of seeing my mom struggle with these things. And me being a kid, I wasn't able to help her because I'm a kid. So it was really difficult to go through that, but at the same time, I think my mom had such an independence, and she still does. She has an independence and a strength about her that I always admired, in terms of being able to take care of herself and being able to take care of me. My grandmother, my cookum, she is also a survivor of residential school, and I find that my mom told me, you know, when I was growing up, when I was your age, my mom had a trouble saying I love you to me.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not her fault, because she was residential school took away our took away our learnings of how to love one another, our learnings of family and our teachings. So when my grandmother had all of her kids, all of those kids, when they started having their kids, their grandkids, they really kind of put the stop on that, and they started practicing that reciprocity that they didn't have when they were growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom would tell me, "I love you, my boy. I'm proud of you. You can do these things." And that's nothing against my kookum. She's affected by trauma in her own way.
Mm-hmm.
My mom's affected by trauma, and I'm affected by trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the biggest breakdown, was that none of this is our fault. This is just an institutional evil, an institutional negativity that has stemmed hundreds and hundreds of years and rippled. We're still here healing from it, but that's the important part to focus on, is that we're still here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part that keeps me going. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, my mom was an artist, or is an artist, and she went to film school when I was growing up as well. So she would show me all these different movies, TV shows, and music, and she was so encouraging with me to do all of those things as well. So I started doing those things when I was a teenager. I started writing. I started making short films. I started playing guitar. And it was incredible, because as I was finding my art, I was learning to find myself. And as I turned 18, this is 2 years ago, going on 3 years ago, I had this realization that, you know, I never really got around to that Native identity thing, even though that's who I am. And I didn't figure it out yet. And I realized that, and as I was thinking about going to college, I was like, no, I want to resolve this in some way. If I'm going to put myself out there, there's some part of me that doesn't feel complete yet. So I started writing about my life, and that was the first time I'd done it. It's a scary thing sometimes when you write about yourself, right? It's
mm-hmm.
very intimate. So what ended up happening was I had these paragraphs and paragraphs, and I'm like, well, surely I'm not the only one out there, because I remember being in elementary school and middle school, and I was seeing kids exactly like me. These native young faces, yeah, like native boys like me. Yeah, we are all kind of loners, all kind of outcasts because of other kids, sometimes bullied. And I realized that, you know, all of us have a story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
All of our stories are valid. And that's when I really learned that maybe I could help someone with this, or maybe it'll even just help me. At the end of the day, it will be good to put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I made a pitch, and I made a podcast pitch. I had one of my high school teachers look over it. he looked it over, and I sent it off to CBC. And I was thinking, like, I didn't go to journalism school, and I don't have any experience in broadcasting, really. I had a job at the radio station operating a soundboard, but that wasn't related to journalism or writing necessarily. That was more of a tech job. And then, so I wasn't expecting anything, but at the same time, I was like, well, the worst that can happen is they say no, and then I just move on to the next person who's going to listen to me, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I waited for a while. And eventually they got back to me, and they were interested. And that was the biggest shock to me. Or I don't want to say the biggest shock, but it was a loving surprise, because I was like, oh my goodness, this is an opportunity. Because, you know, if you're going to put yourself out there as an artist, and, you know, you're blessed by the Creator with these gifts, you start with yourself, and then you start helping others after that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I started making pieces. I moved to Vancouver in late 2019. I had about 6 months of the I want to say pre-lockdown pandemic Vancouver, and then the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
And then that's where we are now. It got delayed for a little bit, but eventually we got working. Uh-huh. And we released those two seasons in 2021. And it was incredible because the whole thing, especially in season two, the whole thing we were focusing